What would your reaction be if I told you that I've run a marathon? First, you might say, well, that must have been a long time ago. But what if I told you I started a marathon? It's a big difference, isn't there? There's nothing commendable necessarily about starting a marathon. I guess there would be very few things to which great commendation could be given to just simply say, I started. Most worthwhile accomplishments are marked by not the beginning, but by the end. And certainly that's true of the Christian race. And so this week we have made it our endeavor to do a series of lessons that I've entitled Steadfast to the End. I'm assuming that the majority of you have started the race. If you haven't yet started the race, I assume your presence here tonight indicates that you're at least interested in starting the Christian walk, the Christian race. But I want to encourage you tonight to not just start, but to finish. To complete it. And so we've had lessons that are kind of centered around that concept. Tonight, as was already indicated, I want you to turn with me in your Old Testaments to the book of Job. We're going to look at Job, a man of character. If I were to ask you tonight, if this were a Bible class instead of a sermon, I was going to ask you to give me one word to describe Job. Probably most of you would raise your hands and say patience. And you'd be right. The New Testament commends him as being a man of patience. But if I pushed you further and said, what's another word that you could use to describe Job? Someone else might throw up their hand and say faith. He was a man of faith in all the things that he faced. He did not give up his ultimate faith in God. And you'd be right. But another word that describes Job is character. Or integrity. That's a word that God himself used to describe Job. And I want to use Job this evening and three lessons from Job in helping us to be like he, men and women of character. Because it's going to require true, honest, genuine Christian character to be able to endure and finish the race. You will not finish the Christian race on reputation alone. Reputation is what you claim to be, and maybe even what others think you to be, but your character is who you really are. If we could drill down deep into your soul, we would see who you really are. That's your character. And it takes that type of integrity, that type of character, to be what we ought to be, and certainly for the long haul. Look with me. Are you in the book of Job? Job chapter 1, verse 1. It says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was upright and blameless, one who feared God and shunned evil. I want to remind you that that's God's description of this man. A good introspection, a good self-reflection exercise is to contemplate what if there were going to be a new book of the Bible. And rather than being called the book of Job, it was going to be called the book of Ken, or the book of, and insert your name. How would God describe you? There was a man named, a woman named, from the land of Hartzell, and he or she was, how would God describe you? Not how you describe yourself or even how your friends and family would describe you. That, again, would be your reputation. But if God was to describe and expose your character before all of mankind, how would he describe you? He described Job as a man who was blameless and upright, who feared God and shunned evil. You remember the story of Job. Satan does not question necessarily the character of Job as described, but he questions the motivation behind that, and maybe the true depth of that character. Because he challenges God by saying, this man Job, who you claim is blameless and upright, is only blameless and upright because you've protected him. You've put a hedge about him. You take away everything he has, Satan said, and you'll see who Job really is. To that point, Satan was right. You take away everything Job is, and you'll see who he is. Now, Satan was ultimately wrong because he said that Job would be exposed as being a fraud, that he'll actually curse you, God, if you take away his blessings. And so God allows Satan to do just that. You remember that story in chapter 1 of the book of Job, as Job's kind of just minding his own business, and one messenger after another comes and brings increasingly devastating news. And it seems that the text is implying stating that as soon as one man would almost finish his sentence of bad news, somebody else would jump in and interrupt and say, well, I've got some more bad news, Job. He loses all of his many earthly possessions. But far worse than that, he loses all of his children in one horrible day. After all of that transpires, Satan appears before Job, before God again. And notice what is now said. Job chapter 2. Verse 3. God had earlier in chapter 1 said the same thing to Satan that he had said to us in the introduction to the book, that Job was blameless and upright, one who feared God and shunned evil. Notice what is said of Job now, after everything has been violently stripped from him. Job 2, verse 3, the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? God says, Satan, you were wrong. We now see the true character of Job fully. And you ever notice that he says the exact same thing about Job after everything is stripped from him that he said about him before? And so Satan was wrong. It wasn't the protection of God. It wasn't the blessings that he was experiencing that made Job who he really was. Job really was who he was. Everything's been taken away from him, Satan, and he can still be described as blameless and upright, fearing God and shunning evil. Nothing has changed. Now, I said Job was described the exact same way after as he was before, but with one exception. Keep reading in Job chapter 2, verse 3. After saying that he again was blameless, upright, one who fears God and shuns evil, God says, and still he holds fast to his integrity, though you have incited me against him to destroy him without cause. God now adds a word to blameless and upright, God-fearing, shunning evil. God now mentions his character or his integrity. The first lesson that I think we can learn from the story of Job is that when we face adversity, and we surely will, that when we face adversity, we, like Job, must maintain our character. Because adversity does just to us what it did to Job. It strips away all the trappings, all the facades, and it exposes us for who we really are. Have you ever met somebody who was just not a nice person? And maybe a friend of theirs comes up to you and tries to make excuses for them. Well, now don't pay attention to old so-and-so there. You caught him on a bad day. You're not seeing the real him. Wrong. Sad to say it. Wrong. Job teaches us that you see who a person really is, not on their best day. We can all be smiling and happy and well-behaved on our best day. Job teaches us the lesson, or God teaches the lesson through Job, that we maintain our integrity, or our integrity is exposed, our character is revealed on days of adversity. And we all have those days, don't we? Bad days. Sometimes, like Job, devastatingly bad days. But sometimes just regular old bad days. And you know the good thing about a regular old bad day? Is it lets you know who you really are. I'm going to tell you about a bad day I had. Not the worst day I've ever had, just a regular old bad day. That taught me a lot about myself. This was several years ago. Deidre and I had not been married very long. We had our son, who's now 29, was just a baby. We were living in Coleman, and I was working up here at Decatur. And as I pulled into the parking lot of where I was working in Decatur, my car just shut down just like that. And I thought, oh no, what am I going to do? I'm about to clock into work. I don't have time to check on my car and work on my car. But I remembered there was a garage just across the highway from where I worked. And so I went inside and got the phone and called over there and told them my car just quit on me. Could they get a wrecker to come pick it up out of my parking lot and take it over there? I was hoping they'd get it fixed, work on it and fix it while I was at work. That'd work out great, wouldn't it? So they said, yes, we'll tow it over here. We'll take a look at it. Well, they called me just a little bit later and said, Mr. Chapman, we've got your car in here. We figured out what's wrong with it. Timing band broke on it. When that timing band breaks, everything just shuts down. But it's no problem. We'll get one from the Ford dealer. We'll put a new one on. We'll have you done by lunch. Famous last words, right? So a little after lunch, I called and I said, how's progress going on my car? I get off work at 4 today. Is it going to be ready? Oh, no problem. He said, well, we did run in one little hiccup. We didn't have the right tool, and so we had to send to the Ford dealer to get the tool to put on the timing belt. But we'll have it done. 4 o'clock's easy. Well, about 4 o'clock, getting ready to clock out, I called again and said, I'm going to come pick up my car. Well, there's a little bit of a problem. We run into a snag here. It's going to take us about another hour and a half. About 5:30, we'll have your car ready. Well, I'm thinking on my feet. I had a good friend of mine who worked with me. In fact, his parents are here tonight. Brad Tootin worked with me at the same place. And he lived in Coleman too, but he didn't get off till 6. So I thought, I went to Brad. I said, Brad, I got a question for you. Can I drive your car home? I'm getting off work right now. You work till 6. Can I drive your car and you drive mine home? They tell me it's going to be done by 5. Easy. Well, Brad was a good friend. He said, sure, here. He gave me the keys to his car. I drove on home, got back to Coleman, had a little sneaking feeling. About 5:30, 5:45, I called the garage again. Well, bad news, Mr. Chapman, we're not going to be able to get your car ready till in the morning. And I thought, oh, great. Now I've stranded my buddy, you know. And so I get in Brad's car, drive back to Decatur. This time we only had one vehicle, and Deidre had been sitting at home with the baby all day. And she says, well, let me go with you. Get out of the apartment. And so she packed up the baby, got in Brad's car, headed up the interstate to Decatur. We get about right here in Hartsel on the interstate, and the check engine light on Brad's car comes on, and steam just comes out from under the hood like crazy. And so I pull over the side of the road. That thing's overheating, something terrible. This is the day before cell phones, day before anything like that. So we sat there on the side of the road. Finally, a good Samaritan stops and takes me up to the next exit to where there's a gas station. At that gas station, we get milk jugs and empty cartons and everything all full of water. And I have to walk about 4 miles back down the interstate with all those jugs hanging on. Put all that water in Brad's radiator. And babies crying. wife's crying. We drive on to Decatur into the parking lot. Well, it's 6:30 now. Now, if you hadn't been paying attention, Brad got off work at 6. It's now 6:30. I haven't been able to contact him, so I get in the parking lot. Brad's nowhere to be seen. The doors of the business are locked. And I think, where's Brad at? I've got his car. My car's across the street in the garage. And so I go across the street to the payphone, call his mother, and I say, Carol, is Brad home yet? No, he didn't get off work till 6. She said, he should be home any minute. And I said, no, he won't. I got his car. And so I tell Deidre, I said, I'm not leaving until I find out where Brad is. I'm not going to leave him stranded here in Decatur. I figured he's walking off somewhere. And so we hang around about 6:30, 6:45. Finally, I call Carol about 7 o'clock. Now, again, to refresh you, I got off work at 4. All of this started at 8 o'clock in the morning. I call Carol. Finally, W.A. and Carol, finally, Brad answers the phone. I say, Brad, how did you get home? He said, well, somebody loaned me the car. You weren't here. And I said, yes, I know. I'm sorry. And I said, your car overheated. Oh, I should have told you. That thing does that every once in a while. I said, yeah, you should have told me. But I shouldn't have borrowed your car. So I say, okay, finally. About 7:30, I said, let's get ready to go. And I said, but wait a minute. Fool me once, shame on you. We went across to that same gas station. I filled up all those jugs again, just in case Brad's car overheated on the interstate again. Put all those jugs in the trunk. Close the trunk. At 8 o'clock, at 9, been 12 hours since this ordeal started. Got back in the car. There's my tired wife, crying baby still in the back seat. And I looked at Dieter and I said, let's go home. Then I said, please tell me you've got the keys. She said, no, you took them out to open the trunk. They were in the trunk. With the water. You ever have a day like that? Or a far worse day? That's when you figure out who you really are. Again, Satan was partially right when he says, God, you give Job a really bad day and you'll see who he really is. But where Satan got it dead wrong, Job was a man of integrity. When you're faced with adversity, maintain your character. The second thing we learn from Job is that when we're tempted to do otherwise, you see, Satan doesn't just stop with one tact. Job faced adversity, horrible adversity. We talked about the worst day of his life. Satan will come back at him again and now touch his flesh, the thing he had been forbidden to do the first round of suffering. And now Job's own health is taken away from him. And when we're reintroduced to Job in Job chapter 2, he is sitting in a pile of ashes. All of his wealth gone, his children are gone, and he has a broken piece of pottery. And he's scraping the open wounds on his flesh for a little bit of relief. And Mrs. Job comes to him. Should have been his closest friend. His greatest ally, including his greatest spiritual ally. Should have been. Comes to him with this question. Look with me in Job chapter 2. His wife, verse 9, says to him, do you still hold to your integrity? Curse God and die. Four horrible words. Curse God and die, she says. Someone has said, now, somebody else said this. I didn't say this. Somebody else said that Job was the most afflicted man that ever lived. He lost his wealth. He lost his children. He lost his health. But he kept his wife. Now that's not a sexist statement, but it's an accurate statement, isn't it? She should have been there to help him, to encourage him. And instead, the closest person, maybe the only person he has left on earth, tempts him to sin. Curse God and die. Your character will be revealed in adversity. Your character will also be revealed in times of temptation. We talked yesterday about temptation really being a choice between loving God or loving that selfish thing. The test is temptation. And sometimes that temptation will come not from evil strangers, not from the world as we normally categorize it, and it never comes from Satan dressed in red with flames coming off of him, but it often comes in the form of a close friend or a family member, of a co-worker, a classmate, a neighbor who will say, nobody's looking. Nobody will know. Or maybe they'll say, curse God and die. Job passed the first test. Will he pass this one? That may have been a more difficult test than the first one. Job's reply is in chapter 2, verse 10, where he says, but he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God? Shall we not accept adversity? Then the text adds this, in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. A couple of things are interesting, maybe more than a couple of things, but at least a couple of things are interesting about Job's response. Number one is, Job does not indicate, and the rest of the book will show us that that's the case, Job did not indicate that he had all the answers as to what was going on. He did not. But he says, we have to accept what comes from God, good or bad, explainable are the inexplicable. We accept from the hand of God. The second thing that I find interesting is, and I hope I'm not reading too much into the text by saying this, but it seems to me that verse 10 comes not just after verse 9, which is obvious, but it would seem to me that it comes immediately after verse 9. There's no indication in the text, in the character of Job, that Job thought about her temptation for a day or two and then got back to her later and said, you know, I've been thinking about what you said. I've been weighing the pros and the cons of cursing God and dying or keeping my integrity. It seems to me that without very much of a pause, if any at all, she says, curse God and die. And what I think we know about Job, Job turns around and says, no. We talked again yesterday about that way of escape from temptation. The proverb writer talks about taking fire into our bosom and somehow being surprised that we get burned by that. Sometimes the best response to temptation is the immediate response to say no. Even when we don't understand what's going on, why it's going on, Job says we've got to accept good and bad. The third and the last lesson from Job. Job's character was tested and revealed in adversity. It was tested and revealed in temptation. And so will ours. But the third lesson that we'll see from Job is that when everybody else, seemingly, is giving up and giving in, hold on to your character. Turn over to chapter 21. Job's wife has been no help. Actually, she's a hindrance to him. Job's three friends will come along, and we can't really call them wicked, I don't think, but they're little or no help, and their explanations of what's going on. And so Job is trying to figure out what's going on. Why is this happening to me? Job, not in a braggadocious way, but Job recognizes what God recognized, what Satan recognized, what his wife recognized, that he was a man of integrity, a man of character. And yet all of this is crashing down upon him. And when he's looking at his own life, a righteous man to whom horrible things are happening, he can look out his window and see unrighteous people who seem to be flourishing. And that doesn't seem fair. And so he wrestles with that. Look in Job chapter 21, start in verse 7. Why do the wicked live? Job 21, verse 7. Why do the wicked live and become old? Yes, become mighty in power. Their descendants are established with them in their sight, and their offspring before their eyes. Now, Paul's there. What had happened to his descendants and his offspring? A righteous, godly man. And he says, I can look out at these wicked people. It's not happening to their children. Their houses, verse 9, their houses are safe from fear. Neither is the rod of God upon them. Their bull breeds without failure. Their cow calves without miscarriage. They send forth their little ones like a flock. And their children dance. They sing to the tambourine and harp and rejoice to the sound of the flute. Job says, I don't understand what's happening to me. All of these things have been taken away from me, and I can see wicked people everywhere I turn, and none of this bad stuff seems to be happening to them. Job must have felt like a man on an island. But yet in all of this, Job did not sin with his lips. Your character is revealed in adversity. Your character is revealed in times of temptation. Your character is revealed when it feels like you're the only one who's trying to do what's right. And everybody else, seemingly at least, has bowed the knee to Baal. The wonderful thing, and surely one of the reasons God designed it this way, the wonderful things about a local church such as this is that you can come together of people of like precious faith and to be reminded, I'm not the only one. The bad part about that is you don't get to take these people with you everywhere you go. And so you'll find yourself in circumstances and situations and locations where you may be the only one. And it's then that your character will be revealed. You ever feel like you're the only person at work, the only person at school, the only person in your neighborhood who's standing up for what's right? You know, we talk about standing up for the truth. And that used to mean, in our eyes, teaching the truth on baptism and instrumental music, because all the other stuff everybody agrees with us about. Not that way anymore, is it? The list has grown of what it means to stand against others. And it's not easy. It's not easy to go against the stream. I'll give you another illustration. You ever gone through the Atlanta airport? That's fun, isn't it? I remember several years ago I had a connecting flight in Atlanta. I don't remember where I was going on a gospel meeting, I'm sure, because it's by myself. And I had a connecting flight in Atlanta, as you always do when you leave Alabama. And this day, my connecting flights were really close. We're going to be cutting it close from landing time and taking off time. And I truly believe that there's somebody, probably a team of people with Delta Airlines, whose sole job is to make sure that your connecting flights are as far away as possible in the airport. that if it just pops up automatically that you're at this gate and then you leave from this gate, somebody goes, oh, no, 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 we can't have that. He's landing at 823. He must take off from Z78. Well, that was my case that day, and some delays had happened, and I knew it was going to be cutting it close. And so as that plane landed, I grabbed my luggage. I had my carry-on bag in this hand, my briefcase in this hand, and I was in the running position. I was ready to go. I knew the challenge was on. And I shot out of that plane, came to the end. I took a left going down the concourse, running, pushing through. And I may be slightly exaggerating the next 2 points. The whole state of Georgia was in the Atlanta airport. And everybody but me was going that way, and I needed to go that way. And I don't slip easily through a crowd. Pardon me, excuse me, I'm sorry, that'll heal. I'll buy you a new one. Through banging off of people, going around, trying to get to where I needed to be. And everybody else was going the other way. I'm going to tell you, more than once it occurred to me, I don't know where these people are going, but I think I'll just turn around and go with them. It'd have been easy. Even as heavy as I am, all I'd have had to do is turn around and do this, and they'd have pushed me through the airport. But I needed to go the other way. Do you ever feel that way spiritually? Like you need to be going that way, and everybody else is going that way? And be honest with yourself. In days of adversity and in moments of temptation, you kind of thought about turning around and going with them. It'd have been a lot easier. But the Bible would encourage us that in the midst of spiritual darkness, that you let your light shine. Job would be like those cloud of witnesses that would encourage you that when you look out your window and all the wicked people are prospering and you're not, don't give up. Keep swimming against the current. Job was a man of patience, a man of faith, and a man of wonderful character. He forever stands as an example that we can be too. When times are bad, when you're tempted to sin even by the closest people around you, and when everybody else seems to be giving up and giving in, Job, and the story of Job, reminds us that your surroundings, your peers, your friends, your enemies, none of these determine your character. You do. And so be a man and woman of character. God will help you. God will help you to be a man or woman of character. When you become a child of God, the descriptions are legion of what happens at that moment. One of the things that happens when you become a child of God is that your sins are washed away and you become a new creature, a new creation, so that you can be a man and woman of character. Would you become a Christian tonight? You'll have to swim upstream. It'll be difficult. But with God's grace and your integrity intact, you can do it. Maybe you've given up. Maybe you turned around and went with them because it was the easier path. It's not too late to stop and say, no, I'm going to let my light start shining. If we can help you in any spiritual way tonight, why not let it be known right now as together we stand and as we sing.